Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to the DC Sports Brain Trust. My name is Varun. I am your host and moderator, joined, as always, by three of my good friends and the best damn sports analysts around, Chris, Nick, and Rahul. Gentlemen, I would ask how you're doing, but I think I already know the answer to that.
I'm hungover.
Yeah, that sounds about right. And
Nick was at a wedding this weekend.
He was.
It was just, yeah, all weekend, nonstop.
Nick was today. Were you socially distancing and wearing masks?
No.
Oh. Well, what a criminal.
Do as I
Meanwhile,
say
y'all had hung out at my place to watch a playoff game.
We did not watch a playoff game. We didn't watch a playoff game. We watched a regular season game that we are about to talk about.
Man, time just flies.
Speaking of flies, I actually don't have a good segue for this. So let's just open up talking about
Nets are kind of a fly.
You know what? that was the only one I could think of, and I'm like, you know what? I'm just not even going to use that. Anyway, let's open things up. Talk about baseball. Start with the series from our reigning, defending world champion Washington Nationals. Had a series against the Mets. They completely destroyed the Mets on the 10th with a 16-4 dub.
Followed that was a sexy win.
It was a very sexy win. Followed by a 2-1 dub over the Mets again on the 11th. And then on the 13th, the Mets got the third game and beat us 6-11. And the big highlight of that game is Strasburg got ejected for calling the ump a bitch.
Or something to that effect.
He literally yelled out fucking brutal after a bad, I think it was a strike call.
It was a strike call, yeah, I think.
Yep.
I mean, it was brutal.
Yeah, those umpires are pretty terrible, but I'll get into that during the recap of all the games a little more, personally.
So to wrap up the series, the Mets beat the Nats 8-2. So the series ended up at a 2-2 stalemate. And then after facing the Mets, the Nats came back down to Baltimore to face the Orioles. And first game looked good. 15-3 dub. It was great, other than, you know, Starlin Castro smashing his wrist. And now we have Luis Garcia at second, which we'll talk about in a little bit. After that, on the 15th, the Nats lost 3-7. And then we had Strauss on the IL now for carpal tunnel syndrome. And then on the 16th, the Nats just barely beat the Orioles 6-5. And just like how Strauss was tossed, Anibal Sanchez was tossed. Because the
He was actually not tossed.
Was he not tossed?
I thought he was tossed, but not he wasn't told to leave the stadium. Like, he was told to get off the stands.
Apparently, because he's an extra player, he's not supposed to be in the quote-unquote dugout.
He wasn't in the dugout. He was in the stands.
Well, that's technically part of the dugout right now.
Really? Is that a rule for this season?
Nobody's really enforcing it. Like, if they're a player, they just kind of sit there. Like, most of the umpires are just, letting them do what they do, but Angel Hernandez, being a power-hungry asshole of an umpire, it was like, no, you can't sit there. It's like, this is the senior lunch table. You can't sit with us kind of thing. And he made him sit in the tunnel instead to watch the rest of the game.
Wait, so if you get ejected, do you have to go home or do you just sit in the locker room?
I think you can go in the locker room normally, but I don't know what the rules are for
this
year.
They tell you to go to the team bus and drive yourself back to the hotel.
I was about to say, like, I just picture the funny visual of Strauss, like, leaving the stadium and stealing the team bus to go back to the hotel.
Well, they've been really stingy about hanging out in the clubhouses this season, so I don't know exactly what the rules are. But normally you just sit in the clubhouse and watch the rest of the game on the clubhouse TVs.
Makes sense, I guess. But anyway, let's go ahead and talk real quick about these games. It's for me, it's very mixed because, I mean, we did have some promising dubs, but they were just overshadowed by injuries, by, you know, umps not doing their job correctly, by some bad pitching. Just overall, I feel like some games went in the Nats' favor, and then some games they lost due to either just bad playing on their part or, like, outside circumstances they couldn't control. But I want to get your all's thoughts on it. Chris, let's start with you. I want to get your thoughts on these two series.
It's hard for me to remember all the way back to the Mets, to be honest. Hold on, let me...
Well, I guess, Chris,
as a whole?
Yeah, just as a whole. We don't have to go into every single game.
So, essentially, the starters have been uncharacteristically bad, except for maybe Max Scherzer. Anibal Sanchez really needs to step up, obviously. But he did the same kind of thing last year. He started off badly and started to ramp up. We just need him to ramp up a little bit faster this year. But, yeah. The guys in the field have been pretty solid, especially hitting Trey Turner, as we kind of said in last week's episode, that he needed to kind of step up and start hitting. And he's kind of pretty much done that this week, which is really nice to see. I think he was like 6-for-8 in that Orioles series, which is really, really nice to see him start to turn around. And then Luis Garcia has been doing well. Keyboom has been doing pretty solid. So around the team, hitting wise, they've been doing pretty well for the most part.
Yeah, I've been very impressed with Garcia. He has taken his opportunity and has ran with it. We've gotten some good hitting out of him, some decent defense out of him as well. And like, I really think that, I doubt Castro is going to have to fight for his job, but when he gets back from injury, but I really think that Garcia could potentially, you know, he's at least going to be the off day guy, in my opinion, perhaps a DH guy.
I imagine if Castro comes back, this season, I don't think he's going to, but if he does, they'll probably option him back down to the minors. Garcia, they'll option down.
You don't think Garcia can make an argument for himself?
I mean, unless he like really shows that he's better than Starlin Castro, they're not going to keep him on the team unless he's the starter. I'll put it that way. Because then he starts going into his service timer and he starts getting into his arbitration timer faster than he would otherwise. And he would just be sitting on the bench. So that's why a guy like Wilmer Defoe stays on the team. He doesn't have any options, and they just kind of keep him around to be a off day guy, like we saw this weekend.
That's kind of tricky, though,
to give the starters some rest.
If Garcia just gets on like a hot streak, and like you're like, well, should we option him down, or like do we just keep on playing him and like hope we're like getting the most out of this, and just worry about it later?
Yeah, that's the question that Mike Rizzo would have to answer. Whether he thinks that it's worth keeping him up here. And as the starter, because you have to have him as the starter, or if you want to send him down and save his arbitration time a little bit more. So, yeah. But I think he would really, really, really have to show that he's definitely better than Starlin Castro. And seeing how well Starlin Castro was playing, I don't know if that would be possible. But either way, I don't think Starlin Castro is going to be back this season. So it doesn't really matter for this year. He'll be playing. Yeah. Garcia will be playing the whole season at second as the starter at this point.
Makes sense, Nick.
Unless he really takes a turn for the worst, obviously.
Yeah, Nick, you've been quiet. Want to get your thoughts on this?
It's kind of like Chris mentioned. It's tough to really summarize. So I guess in the last two series, we've gone 4-3. It's been a lot of back and forth. Really, really good wins and really tough losses. I think they're kind of about where they need to be right now. They've kind of stopped the bleeding. They're not really stumbling out of the gate like they were. You know, they're at least putting together a stretch of about 500 here. And I think that's really where they need to be for the next couple weeks. Mm-hmm. By the time we're halfway through the season, I think we need to be at least 500. And that's coming up pretty quick because we're what, like 8-11 right now?
Yeah, 8-11.
I want to see us be about 15-15, and that'll be the halfway point. And, you know, I think if we get to that point, I think we're in good shape. So I think everything's going all right, and I agree, Anibal really needs to step up. But, you know, otherwise, next man up for Starlin Castro, whether it's Defoe or whether it's Garcia.
It's not Defoe.
Yeah. It'll be Garcia.
Defoe sucks.
He's awful. So bad.
Either day, I'm not too worried about his injury yet because I think as a team we're still kind of putting it together, and I think I don't know. It sucks that we lose him, but I'm not too worried about it right now. I think we're just starting to find our stride, and I think as long as we're going at least 500 for now.
With the shortened season, no team really has time to like put it all together if they're having like too slow a period of time. They have to really get it together, even with starters missing like the MVP. And Castro is who's starting off pretty well. It's just they have to find a way to have those, and Garcia seems to be filling out well. And we'll just see how that is going forward. Josh Harrison played okay, but he's not really making a case for himself.
I don't think he is.
No, not really. So, yeah, we'll just wait and see and hope the bats stay kind of hot.
So the playoffs are a little bit expanded, so I think we cannot stumble anymore, but as long as we're going at least 500, I think we're okay for now, because I think if we can get hot late, like in the last 20 games, that'll be enough for us to go to the playoffs. And we just need to get hot at the right point. So I don't think we need to be immediately getting hot like right now, but I think, you know, obviously we have a very short season, so it has to happen. But Soto is getting in his stride, so I'm not worried.
Well, we need Strasburg to get hot is the question.
We need Strasburg to be healthy. Does he need to be hot? Not necessarily. He needs to be above average.
I mean, all the Nats need to do
by the playoffs, though.
All the Nats need to do to make it to the playoffs is be top 8 of the 15 because of the expanded playoff format. Hopefully they're able to do that. But that's all you have really is working for this year. Like, you don't need that first place spot in the NL or in the NL East. You know, you don't need those wild card spots. You just need to make it because there's no fans. There's no home field advantage, really. So other than that, don't really have to worry about it as much this year. Obviously, it'd be nice to go in with a high confidence, but just got to work for that 8th place spot in the NL.
I mean, I want first place, but, you know.
Oh, yeah. I'm saying, like, it'd be nice. And the NL East is pretty log jammed right now.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, the first place team being the 9-6 Marlins, second place 13-10 Braves. So it's not out of reach yet. Like, the Nats are only 3 games back from the Marlins.
How are the Marlins in first? That is,
because they haven't played that many games. But yeah, I can't imagine the Marlins keep this up for the whole. Well, maybe they. It's only 60 games, so who knows? But
they started what, 8-1, and now they're 9-6, so they're actually falling a little bit.
Yeah. So I imagine that. I mean, they're 5-5 in the last 10, so that's not great. And same with the Braves, same with the Phillies. So if the Nats can turn it up and get up to the top 2 spots, even just in the NL East, they make it.
Speaking well, about the Orioles series, just briefly, I've been noticing on social media specifically a lot of Orioles fans coming out of the woodwork and being like, oh, these are the Nats, et cetera, et cetera. Because of the first kind of disastrous series we had against the Orioles. So, just kind of surprising to see. But they are playing, like, decently.
I mean, the Orioles are playing out of their minds right now. I don't know what's in the Kool-Aid in Baltimore right now, but, like, Pedro Severino, ex-Nat, has been playing out of his mind.
Yeah, just to forget that. He's been beating the shit out of us.
Yeah, I don't get that. But like half the team for the Orioles is just insane right now. And I don't get it.
They're hot.
Yeah.
Especially on offense.
Like, I think Nunez is hitting over four guys hitting over 300 right now, including Severino, who's hitting 333, which is ridiculous.
Yeah. It's just sustainable for them personally.
Yeah, I mean, they're playing well. But yeah, the question of sustainability lingers.
Yeah,
I
can't imagine our crosstown rival is keeping it up, especially in a division as lethal as the AL East, probably arguably the best division in baseball.
Honestly, I don't know why the Nats don't just drive up to Baltimore and start doing little pranks on the Orioles to
like TPing Camden Yards.
Yeah, exactly. Like
hiding out at Pickles Pub.
Exactly.
Hey, I hear Pickles Pub is the poppin' place.
Maybe in 2019. Well, because 2019 we could actually go into bars and stand within close contact of each other. Anyway, let's talk. I want to bring up a bright spot. The NL Player of the Week was one Juan Soto.
You mean Juan Goto?
Juan Goto.
The one and only.
He's just insane. Like that home run that he hit the other day, the game on Saturday against
that just made it over. I was just like,
fly ball that he just somehow muscled over the fence. Like when he hit that, I was watching with Rahul and Varu, and I said, "Oh, that's an out. That's a bad swing," and it just goes out. I'm like, "What? Excuse me."
Even he was surprised. He was like, "What the hell?" He's just like, "I'll take it."
He is a god amongst men. I don't know how he swings the bat.
So
like that.
He is currently slashing 462, 533, and 1.077. 12 runs scored, 12 hits, a double, 5 dingers, 12 RBIs, and a stolen base in games.
He's hitting 425. Yeah, his OPS is 1450. Like, come on. It's ridiculous.
He's
like
insane.
Nobody hits 1450 OPS.
I mean, he's definitely better than Mike Trout right now.
Yeah.
So, that's the very bright spot of the team. Dominant force in the lineup. He can very easily turn a game around or at least start to get something going with solo dingers as we saw in these past few games. And he's just a good face to have for the team. Like, he's got it all. And I really hope that the Nats are able to, like, utilize the momentum that he has himself for his own accolades and his own stats to corral the team around to get us to, like Nick said, at least 15-15 by the halfway point.
Yeah, hopefully. And maybe we can start talking about how Manfred sent the false positive coronavirus test for Juan Soto to kind of neuter him before he started playing like the MVP he is.
Is this your hot take conspiracy theory?
Hot take tinfoil coronavirus theory.
You think Manfred got in a room and was like, "All right, who can I limit? The Nats were the world champions. Who can I limit on their team?" And he just picked a dartboard.
He's like, I need to take the heat away from my favorite team, the Astros. So
right.
The Astros to look good to make this whole cheating thing look like it was nothing. But since the Astros are sucking right now, it makes the cheating scandal look awful, and it makes Manfred look like a dumbass.
Hey! Joe Kelly just got suspended another 10 games because of your comments, Nick.
I take it back. I'm sorry, Joe.
His suspension positive still. They're 11-10.
They are. Hopefully not for long. I mean, the Astros? You don't want them to stay winning?
Oh yeah, no.
I mean, and Altuve's batting what, like 180
or something?
187, I think, last I saw. Let me double check that.
Springer's even lower.
Speaking of Altuve, Omega mentioned now is a good time to refollow that Asterix Stream Tour Twitter account, because all they've been doing is trashing on Altuve, and it's glorious.
Yeah, Altuve's hitting 184 right now with an OPS. He's got an OPS of 563, which is about a third of what Juan Soto's hitting.
If y'all want to know how to follow that account, go to our account and then follow us, and then go to who we're following, and then follow the Astro Shame account.
But first, follow us.
Yeah, that's what I said. You have to follow us. Yeah. You have to follow us first.
Follow us, unfollow us, and then follow us again to trick the algorithm.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, the Asterix, their best hitter's hitting 293.
And who's
in
that?
Correa.
Correa.
They have, other than that, it's 280s, their best, by a couple of different guys. Versus, and then when you compare them to the Orioles, who have like four guys hitting over 300. So it's a weird world. If you had told me that this would have been happening 2 years ago, I would have laughed.
It's definitely their schedule's misleading. Sorry, Vern.
I was about to ask, what is Bregman hitting?
268. One thing I do want to talk about is how god-awful these umpires have been at the beginning of the season. Because we've all been seeing it, and it's not just the Nationals. It's all over the league. There was a ridiculous amount of ejections yesterday because of coaches and players arguing ball and strike calls. So I wonder, like, how much of this is just the umpires have just been inconsistent, or if it's the fact that they've had to replace a lot of umpires who opted out of this season due to COVID.
I think it's the latter, with the umps just getting replaced and then like umps filling in rather than just like they'll get it ironed out later. I think these problems are going to plague this whole season, and we're going to have kind of inconsistent ump calling and plays throughout, like going throughout the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully the playoffs won't have it, because there'll be less games, so less umpires will be needed calling balls and strikes. But
it's inevitable; it'll happen.
It'll happen to the Nats.
Yeah.
What's one weird thing I thought would kind of help the umps was like less of a crowd distraction. Well, no crowd distraction in terms of them making calls, but I guess that didn't really help them after all, because you have Strasburg yelling at them from the crowd. You have players yelling at them from the crowd to simulate it.
The other question that could be asked is, like, are we seeing more ejections because umpires can hear the players better? Because normally, like, your voice can kind of get lost in the crowd, and even then, like, the umpire can't be certain, really, who's chirping them. It could be a player, a coach, or even the fans, mostly, and you're not going to eject every single fan that badmouths your ball strike calls, otherwise you're going to be ejecting people the entire game. So I wonder how much of it is some of that as well.
One thing I wanted to ask about that is that, like, are they giving them a warning and then ejecting them, or are they just straight ejecting them once they hear, like, any shit-talking towards them?
I mean, I think mostly, like, it's a case-by-case basis. It just kind of depends on how egregious they are and how much they're chirping.
Yeah, I feel like I haven't really seen an ump give a warning this season for many of the Nats games I've watched. They've just, like, straight ejected them.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah. We don't hear everything that the players are saying, so I don't know. Maybe.
Maybe, because we're hearing a good bit with no crowd. So, maybe, yeah. Yeah, who knows?
Things Kevin Long kind of dropped a couple of F-bombs.
I think Anibal took the heat for Kevin Long. I think Long was the one that the wanted to throw out, but I think Anibal took it or something.
Well, like I said, Anibal didn't get ejected for
he got asked to leave the stands or something.
Yeah, the umpire was like, you can't sit there.
Did Kevin Long actually get ejected?
Kevin Long did get ejected.
Okay,
yeah, he got the eject.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Yep. That makes sense.
I'm surprised Davey hasn't yet gotten ejected.
Yeah, I saw a quote from Davey that was like, you could pretty much hear everything, like, from Kevin Long, and it's probably not the best. This isn't exactly what he said, but I'm kind of paraphrasing here. But he's like, I'm really happy that you couldn't hear me during Game 6 of the World Series, because it would not have been pretty.
That's funny.
Yeah.
There was the one point we made where we wanted to talk about a non-Juan Soto player of the week, and I have somebody in mind that is not conventional, but I want to throw it out there anyways.
Oh, so. I do too.
I think we all have different players in mind.
I have a serious player, and then I have the obvious goat of the Nats.
Well, I mean, the obvious goat, we all know who that is, but I have a serious player that may not be conventional.
Who's that?
Tanner Rainey.
Ah.
The guy's doing nothing but putting zeros on the board in single innings or multiple outs of work. He's pitched 9.1 innings this year. He has an ERA of 0.96. He gave up one home run. But I don't have the stats in front of me.
Baseball is the only sport where throwing up nothing but zeros is a good thing.
Yeah.
We have this quarterback here who throws nothing but zeros up.
He's given up one home run, two walks, 14 strikeouts. The guy is masterful so far this year out of the bullpen, and it's such a major step up from what he was a year ago. Like, his stuff is always good when it's good, but, you know, he was so inconsistent last year, and you didn't really know what you were getting when he went out there. But he's been so consistent this year, and the guy is going to be our closer this season. Even though Daniel Hudson's been fine, Tanner Rainey, man, he's awesome.
I felt like last season you were kind of trying to limit his reps and like trying to figure out what were the best matchups for Rainey. But this season, it's like you just throw him out against anyone; he'll be able to get the job done.
Yeah, I mean, he's like you said, he's pretty much just been shutting the door on every single team that he's faced. Can't really ask for much more from Tanner Rainey right now. Hopefully Sean Doolittle can eventually turn it around, but other than that, yeah.
So, yeah. Varun, who's your non-Juan Soto MVP player of the week?
Well, it's always Michael A. Taylor, but
set myself up for that one.
Garbage.
I've been liking Castro, truth be told. I mean, not like this past week, but like in general. He's been hitting super well, and he's been a great asset in the infield. And I'm hoping, I mean, granted, now obviously it doesn't matter, but I'm hoping that, you know, next baseball season when he's back and he's healthy, hopefully he can really cruise himself to potentially be the second best hitter on the team behind Goto. So,
who are you saying?
Castro.
He said Castro.
Perhaps, or we could also have Luis Garcia turn it up and be even better than Castro.
Either one works on me.
More ideal.
Is Garcia your MVP for this?
No, definitely not. I mean, he only hit 2-for-8, which definitely isn't player of the week worthy. Not to say he didn't have a good week.
But I felt like defensively he was all right, except for that one errant throw.
Just want to say Michael A. Taylor 0-for-5 yesterday, so
the game was rigged against him.
He left 7 runners on base, so game probably wouldn't have been as close if Michael A. Taylor was a competent hitter. Same with Defoe, but you know, we all know about Defoe.
Yeah, one is defending Defoe.
I mean, Defoe's bad. Players just the game is just rigged against Michael A. Taylor.
Oh my god. 0-for-5, 4 Ks. Oh, it's just rigged.
Yeah. Because so
what
think about
what is
it,
your all... choice, Chris?
What'd you say?
What is your choice for non?
What do you mean, what is my choice
for non Juan Soto MVP player of the week? Nationals.
I mean, more low key one, one that you might not think of, but Corey Seager has been playing out of his mind so far this season. Obviously, you got Mookie Betts with the Dodgers, who we all know is pretty insane. But Corey Seager's been doing pretty well for the Dodgers over there, hitting 294 with a 915 OPS.
And who would you say in the Nationals?
On the Nationals team?
Yeah.
Eric Thames.
It's hard to argue against Carter Kieboom right now, honestly.
Ooh, interesting. Okay.
He's been pretty... His bat's been struggling a little bit the past couple games, but in the field, he's been playing extremely well. Trey Turner would probably be my offensive guy for player of the week.
Actually,
but defensively, yeah, Kieboom is probably the has been showing up the most. He's been making a lot of nice, solid plays over at third base, especially with that 11-assist game the other day, tying a record in a single game.
Yeah, Trey Turner is my MVP, actually, because he's, like, has four home runs. He's, like, best batting average on the team.
Yeah, this week, at least.
Yeah, and he's had the most at-bat. Like, not just this week, but just overall, he's had the most
at-bats. Well, that's because he's the leadoff hitter.
Yeah. But, yeah, he's doing
usually
well.
When you hit first, you get a few more at-bats than the guys who hit behind you.
Yeah, and he hasn't gotten injured yet. Knock on wood. Yeah. But like usually I feel like speedy guys and like in general across all sports are often injury prone just because of hamstring injuries.
Trey Turner, I don't think he ever really got injured before that injury he had last year to his thumb.
Yeah, I can't
recall. Was like his first major injury. So he's been pretty consistent for them over the years other than obviously that injury.
Mm-hmm.
And Robles has been fairly consistent as well.
Well, yeah, except for that one big injury.
Yeah,
but other than that, yeah, he's been fine.
So their speed guys have been pretty healthy.
Yeah. Even though he's hitting well with the hot start, I wouldn't say Cabbie. I'd put Trey Turner over him of like Juan Soto. Yeah.
Trey Turner this week has been doing pretty well. Other than, Juan Soto's one of the best hitters in baseball right now.
Yeah. And Trey Turner was a huge part of that 16-4 game. As well against the Mets. So, yep.
And the 15-3 game against the O's.
Agreed, yep.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Looking forward to hopefully more success with the Nats. In the meantime, let's go the opposite direction, even though we don't want to, and talk about the Caps. They are 0-3 against the Islanders and are on the brink of elimination.
Yep.
Nick.
Yes.
Would you like to talk about this?
Not particularly, but...
Well, I mean...
This is our reality right now. Were you gonna say something?
No, bro. Keep talking.
Or
we can just sit here in silence for 10 minutes and then move on to the next.
I think we should probably do that.
A moment of silence for our struggling Capitals team.
0-3 in the series, 1-5 in the playoffs, in the bubble. I think this series is over. I think their hearts are not in it. I'm assuming this is going to be a sweep and they're going to go 1-6 in the bubble. And... it's just awful, man. I do want to shout out Holtby. I think, it's noted here that he has a 907 save percentage. It's a little bit better than he was doing in the regular season. And frankly, he's been hung out to dry a lot these playoffs. And so I think he's actually done a really commendable job given his circumstances. I would have liked to have seen him supported a little bit more this season and in the playoffs. I mean, it's kind of been the story of the whole season. But the fact is in these playoffs is that our offense has not stepped up enough. Our defense has always been bad, but we've just not stepped up and outscored opposing teams like we could have before. And it's unfortunate, man. And it sucks even more that Barry Trotz is the guy that's just spanking us right now. It really, really shows that we should have hung on to him after we won the cup. That's all I got.
Yeah, I mean, Reardon's been pretty terrible, I think. I imagine you got to get rid of him if they get swept. Even if they lose the series, you got to get rid of him. So yeah. I imagine he'll probably be out of a job unless the Capitals pull off a miracle comeback. But other than that, yeah, Rudin has not been up to snuff, losing in the first round last year and now the first round this year.
And Reardon doesn't really have an excuse either. Like, sure, Backstrom's out, but this is still a very talented roster.
I mean, it's still the team's still better, but they got stomped the first two games, all things considered, pretty much at every end of the game. And then yesterday's game wasn't as bad, but better is not good enough. They I don't know. I don't think this coach is going to make this turnaround. So I think, they're going to be eliminated. Maybe they'll snag one game. But
usually it's
going to be out of a job.
A sign of mediocre coaching is when a team starts off hot and then fails to consistently deliver in the last period or last quarters.
Well, the Caps haven't even been starting off hot, though.
One game they've started off hot. And then
better last game.
Yeah.
They did start off better, but better is not good enough when you're losing 5-2, 4-2. That being said, Verona should have scored on that breakaway. He had pretty much the best chance all game. He's done that three times and hasn't been able to bury any in the back of the net.
He just feels rattled.
And Varlamov's not that good of a goalie. He's serviceable, but he's not that great. So he got to get one of these past Varlamov, and he just hasn't been able to. I don't know what's going on with Verona, but he has been not the Verona we saw the entire regular season.
I know the circumstances here are, different, and there wasn't much time to get back into the swing of things. But the fact of the matter is that the Capitals roster is leaps and bounds ahead of the Islanders roster, and this is strictly just getting out coached.
Like, oh yeah,
one guy had his team show up to play and the other didn't, and I think that's really what this whole thing reeks of.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it.
yeah.
So, I mean, what do you do about Reardon?
Get rid of him. Get rid of him. Go after Gerard. Go after Gerard Gallant from the Vegas Golden Knights when we had played them in the Cup. He got fired early this season, and it was kind of a interesting. I think the team did end up playing better after he got fired, but I think it was just maybe one of those deals where they needed. They needed a new voice in that particular locker room. And I think that's exactly what the Caps need. I think they need a different voice in the locker room. And I think Gerard Gallant makes a lot of sense for the Caps as somebody who can take a really good team to the Stanley Cup playoffs and to the Cup and to the Stanley Cup finals. So he's who I would go after, but there are probably some other options out there.
Yeah, I would recommend not to go after like a newer head coach or like someone who's kind of like a rising star. They really need someone who's experienced, a vet, and like knows how to manage other veteran players. So like, they have that respect for him. Like he's been there kind of deal rather than someone who's just like kind of like young and years, but he has potential to do a good coaching job. So that's like kind of where I stand with that. And also just with the Capitals, it definitely feels a lot more different than our previous playoff run that ended in the Stanley Cup championship, even though when we were down, because the games that we were down in were a lot closer than the games that we've had that were kind of blowouts in the series against the Islanders. Along with that, I think there's also some questionable coaching decisions that Reardon's made, like keeping Kempney out, that I don't necessarily agree with, especially when you have defenders like Siegenthaler, Gudas. Who hasn't really been there. And, well, Gudas has had limited minutes at that. So
either way, like those two guys played last game in place of Kempney, and I don't see how Kempney's playing worse than those two guys.
It must be some injury that has.
It's gotta be.
Yeah. Otherwise, like, it just doesn't make any sense.
That's the only explanation I could have. But he didn't say. They said it was a healthy scratch. So I don't really get playing Siegenthaler and Gudas, and maybe even like, Fejavari, over Kempney.
Yeah, maybe he's like speaking out in the locker room or anything. But he doesn't seem like that kind of player.
It
would have.
Yeah, I doubt it. I don't think the Caps have any bad. Personnel or team personality players on the team for the most
part.
Except
for that one bench player that we cut before the season.
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that doesn't count.
No, it doesn't.
We should start more fights as a team.
More?
Yes, we should injure lines so that, like you know, not injure, like, serious injury, but, like, injure enough that they don't play, and that way it's our first line versus the other team's third line.
Are you saying Wilson should do a hit job on the other team's goalie? Just like
not a hit job, but like if he, you know, attempts to smack a player against the boards and he goes the other way and hits the goalie, I don't see anything wrong with that.
But like speaking about like the offseason and stuff like that, something I really wanted to talk about was we had a podcast where we talked about our expectations for the playoffs. And, like, what they needed to do to succeed.
Which one?
And but, like, one of the biggest ones we were talking about was just, like, the defense has to, like, at least play average and the offense can pull through because they were such a high-powered offense. And those expectations are kind of, like, subverted between what actually happened in the playoffs. And, like, none of us really saw this coming. What do y'all think about that?
Yeah, it sucks.
It sucks. And we were talking about, like, Holtby, like, really needs to pull through. And Holtby's, like, has a pretty good save percentage. It's just the defense is hanging him out to dry, and offensively, we're not really getting stuff going later on in the periods.
I think we have to... there are going to be a lot of questions at the end of this series in regards to what direction you go with the franchise. You know, there are some questions I have in mind now that maybe are too early to talk about, but you do have to wonder that this is a team that relies a lot on veterans, and you have to wonder if they need to inject a little more youth into the team going forward.
I think they have to develop the youth that they have, like Verona, Kuzi, and like stuff like that.
Verona and Kuzi are already pretty much developed.
I mean, yeah, but they sure aren't playing like it right now. Like Braun especially.
Kuzi's been doing okay.
Yeah, he's been
scored last game.
Yeah.
Like, was a he nice could score do a little too. Bit better, but I mean, Braun has been doing terribly. Yeah. He's been taking a lot of bad penalties. He hasn't been scoring. He's given up goals pretty much. Yeah, Braun definitely needs to step it up. If they have any dream of having a miracle comeback.
I think that dream's dead. I think their hearts are out of it. I don't think they want it, and I don't think they believe in themselves. I think it's just kind of a recipe for disaster.
Capitals, prove us wrong. Get back into this.
Yep.
All right, well...
Yeah, for all the Capitals that are listening. All
right, well, yep, for every single Capital that's listening. I know for a fact that Backstrom listens to this podcast.
What's up, Nikki?
How's it? Get better soon.
All right, well, let's move on from this depressing team and move into something even more depressing.
Yes.
The Washington to be determines. They have made a hire. They have hired Jason Wright as their team president, He spent 7 years as a running back in the NFL. He has an MBA from the University of Chicago, and he is a former partner at McKinsey. And he is also the first African-American president of an NFL franchise. Good stuff, in my opinion.
I think it's kind of weird that there hasn't been more minority hires in executive positions in the NFL of all, like, professional football, like, teams. Like, especially considering, like, the racial makeup of the NFL.
They only want the minority players on the field. They don't want them in the front office.
Even, like, coaching-wise, like, we have Ty Tomlin. We've had a spate of coaches, and actually a lot of African-American coaches were laid off, like Hugh Jackson. But Hugh Jackson was for good reason. That Cardinals head coach.
Yeah, Hugh Jackson was terrible.
I'm not defending Hugh Jackson there. But, like, it's just kind of, like, appalling to see that. And, like, now you just have Mike Flores and Mike Tomlin.
Mike Flores, who's that?
Sorry, Flores. Coach Flores. Oh, I don't even know why I said Mike.
Who's Coach Flores? Why am I not remembering?
Dolphins head coach, man.
Oh, Brian Flores. Yeah. Took me a minute. I was having what was that? Who's the Cowboys beat writer?
Yeah, I know who you're talking about, but I forgot his name already.
Something Junior. I was having a moment like him.
Clarence. Yeah, Clarence.
I forget his name, but it's Clarence something. Anyways.
But yeah, we don't really know much about him, but hopefully it's a good hire. McKinsey is kind of a controversial company. But if they're sponsoring us, they are completely legit. Other than that, we'll just see how it goes. It's less weight on Kyle Smith's back and Ron Rivera's back because they don't have to deal with the team shenanigans. And hopefully this move going forward means Dan Snyder is not interfering and kind of stepping off. But as long as he's invited to draft days and he's making questionable decisions, we have to see more going forward. But this is a good step.
So to be very to clarify, this hire is on the business side. So he has the same title that Bruce Allen had, but it's kind of a different job. It's more I think Bruce Allen technically had responsibilities on the business side as well as the football side. Everyone knew him for being an idiot on the football side, but he was an idiot on the business side too. And Jason Wright is going to be the stopgap, hopefully, for the business from the owner. He's going to make the business decisions, and he's going to be in charge of the day-to-day operations for all the marketing, the finance, the PR. And it's frankly much needed because you've got a stadium deal that you need work that somebody has to get working on. You have scandals breaking every other week with this team. Ron Rivera was being looked at as the guy in charge because the owner is a recluse and he's too much of a pansy to go out in front of the media and talk himself. And I never thought that Terry Bateman would be the guy that was going to be the face of the organization, the business organization.
Well, they are interviewing him and stuff. So they are. He is making statements publicly on behalf of the team.
They are. But I think Jason Wright is going to be the face of the business organization now. And this was a move that I thought needed to happen at some point. And I kept looking at Brian LaFemina as being a really good decision. Obviously he had a similar role as COO, who was supposed to be the business guy. And he got scapegoated by Bruce and Dan as being the reason why the fan drop-off happened, even though that was due to the product and just the fact that nobody liked anybody in that building.
And, you know, it's weird, too, because with any other team, like in football, like or otherwise, you normally wouldn't really care about what's happening on the business side of things. But because Dan and Bruce have meddled so badly and there's all these controversies, these sexual harassment suits and everything, you're just like, you're now interested because these are the people that are going to be replacing those idiots and like trying to build like get some respect back into the franchise and try to make them not an embarrassment off the field.
Yeah. And I think culture, when you talk about the culture of a football team, it's not just the locker room. It is It is the building. It is Redskins Park, and it is every single person that goes to work, because they're all interacting with each other, whether it's a little bit or a lot. You know, you want a building full of people that enjoy going to work and are being productive and are helpful. And it sounded like that the opposite existed, and it was a culture of a few people at the top making all the decisions, people at the bottom getting hung out to dry and doing shit work all the time. And, you know, the culture needs to be not just football focused, but business focused as well. And my hope is that this hire will take care of the business side, and that the hire of Ron Rivera takes care of the football side.
Yeah. And just to wrap up on that, just like, you need like the people on the top to empower people below them to speak up and like have an impact. And also, because it's an NFL franchise, you also need the fans to kind of speak up and feel like they've had their opinion heard. And speaking of the fans, I feel like there's a split in opinions and kind of like what they want between older Washington football fans, however few exist, and newer fans of the franchise, which are probably even fewer in number.
Yeah. Well, they've neglected bringing on newer fans for at least the last 15 years. I mean, they've been so stuck in their glory days past, and they've always been stuck in their old traditions. And as, you know, as newer and newer generations of fans in this area have grown up through elementary, middle, and high school, they've become fans of the Steelers and the Ravens. They've
mostly the Ravens, I'd say. And we have one such person on the podcast.
Well, before the Ravens, you know, it was the Steelers. You know, back, I think our generation grew up Steeler fans because they were winning Super Bowls when we were growing up.
But I mean,
6 or 7 years, it's probably
Steelers and Patriots.
That's also a lot, just because a lot of people from Pittsburgh moved down here. A lot of families from Pittsburgh moved down here.
Yeah,
is the other reason.
And the Patriots, just because they win, and that's like what a lot of people have done. And Packers, actually, Packers are big too.
Yeah, but the fact is that you know, children growing up in this area have not become Redskins fans because they've always been a terrible on and off the field product. And so, you know, you've been relying on your old guard fan base, and there's nothing wrong with that. You know, you want to keep those fans happy, but in doing so, you also have to be able to bring in new fans and create new traditions. And look at like what the Capitals and the Nationals have done over the last few years. They've created new traditions. They've won championships, and they've brought in completely different groups of people, all as fans. And you know, ultimately winning makes that a lot easier. Winning championships, or just winning in general, makes that a lot easier. But you always have to be able to bring in new people as fans, and you always have to be able to create new traditions. And, you know, I think that has to take priority. It's going to be very difficult because you've basically created an entire generational gap in this area that is not a fan of the football team in the area. So it's going to be very, very difficult, but they have to try and they have to try and reach out to those new groups of people.
Yeah. Under Bruce Allen and Dan Snyder, all what was happening was there was like a list getting compiled of reasons why you shouldn't root for this team, and like reasons why you should migrate your fandom to a separate team that actually like respects you as a fan. And that like, and right now the growth of new fans are probably only because older fans, like their family, are like passing down their fanhood, or like, oh, they were like born in Virginia, therefore I have to root for this Washington football team, even if they play terribly and they present themselves terribly. So other than that, the team has been making several changes, like tearing down the facility, and I know, and like moving around the radio broadcast team. And we talked a bit about that in the previous one, but a lot of older fans really hate those changes because it feels like, oh, when we had a bit of success, this is what we've had, and this is how I remember the team as. And it's kind of like they're kind of fighting with that image, and they still want change, but they don't want all the change, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I think people just generally don't like change. And so I think you're going to always have a little bit of that. Personally, you know, I agreed that I didn't really like seeing Chris Cooley dropped from the radio broadcasting team. Apparently that was a decision made back in January. I'm not a huge fan of that only because they replaced him with D'Angelo Hall, who I'm just generally not a fan of. I've never really liked him on NFL Network, and I don't know. I don't really care for that. I don't care about them dropping Doc Walker. Never was really a fan of his, so I don't really care about that. And I was never a fan of Larry Michael either. I'm glad he's gone. Obviously, there are other reasons why he's gone.
Agreed.
But, you know, I think there's always going to be some dislike over change, and you kind of just have to deal with it. But yet, ultimately, the team really needed this. And
yeah, it's the greater good is the change. And
the greater good would be the change of pretty much everything, and this is just what they need to do.
Agreed.
I heard that if you say Ravens three times in the mirror, Chris comes through the door and tells you how much Lamar Jackson is better than Pat Mahomes.
Except for in the playoffs.
Ooh. Got him. All right. Let's...
I can't talk that much shit to Chris.
I was about to say, how was the Redskins' last playoff run?
Hey, can you tell us about the Washington football team's last game against the Ravens?
Oh, right.
There?
Well, they weren't the Washington football team. God. They were the Redskins at that point in time.
Yeah, the Washington football team has never played against the Ravens.
The Washington football team is technically undefeated right now.
They also have lost every game they've played.
That's not true.
Actually, that's not true. They haven't lost a single game, but they're undefeated.
Yeah, that has actually
they haven't won.
True.
They haven't won a game either.
Doesn't matter. They've
won off the field, Barone, and that counts as a win
in my heart. Are these the glory days the modern day Washington football team gets?
No, these are definitely not the glory days, but they are undefeated, so we can at least look at that.
Take that, Chiefs. All right. Let's wrap things up and talk about basketball really quickly. Wizards are done. They went 1-7 in the bubble. With the only dub coming against the Celtics after they benched all their starters. There's not really much to really talk about here. They just sucked in the bubble.
Yes.
Yeah,
I mean, I think we were all kind of expecting this.
Yeah, but there was no surprises here except that maybe they won a game, but that's because all the starters were benched for the Celtics.
Yeah, I mean, that was against a Celtics team that was resting their starters for the playoffs, and they didn't want to injure any of their actual players.
Yeah, some surprise may have been like, Thomas Bryant could actually be a good player going forward. But, yeah, other than that, it was, like, pretty much expected that we weren't really going to do anything. And we were just, like, kind of like a small, bump in the road for some of the teams that were actually seriously contending. But what I wanted to bring up was that two coaches have already been fired from the bubble, the Pelicans coach and the Bulls coach. Will the Wizards coach be next?
I don't think so, personally. I don't think doing poorly in the bubble is a fireable offense for him because
it should be. Sorry.
What?
I was saying maybe it should be because he's kind of squandered this team for years.
Yeah,
and he's
like,
a Grunfeld holdover.
We were also expecting that. I think pretty much everybody was expecting this. So I don't think if they're going to fire him, like that's fine. I don't think the postseason is the reason to fire him.
I think they should.
Unlike Reardon, who the reason is because he can't be successful in the postseason.
Right. I
like,
think
that's the difference.
What they should do is like they should fire him in the offseason if they can find someone who's like at least like kind of like the same kind of like proven coach kind of mentality. And then they can immediately step in and they can walk into the season with a hopefully healthy Wall. You'll have Beal there. You won't have Bertans because of the contract situation, but you'll have Roy and Bryant there as well to like kind of form a hopefully serious playoff contending team, and it won't be a rebuild. It'll just be a restart.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's going to be a rebuild either way. It's just like maybe they go to somebody else, maybe they don't. I don't know. But the postseason is not the reason to. it's his entire body of work that has been pretty unsuccessful the past year. So I would understand why they'd fire him as well, because he hasn't been great.
And he's had like an MVP, basically. Well, not MVP, but like an amazing player in Bradley Beal. So there's not like a major talent excuse that he has.
But if you're using the postseason that three of your top four players aren't even playing, I think it's kind of hard to use your, or if you don't want to say, well, two of your top three players aren't even playing, I think it's kind of hard to judge his body of work off of that.
Yeah, and I misspoke a bit earlier. In terms of surprises, I was kind of surprised that we didn't see a better Rui Hachimura performance, just because he was hyped all throughout the season. Like, oh, he's like one of the better rookies of the draft class, and we've been talking about that, but he's kind of let down in the bubble, and that may have been some injury, or he was trying to play like hero ball a lot of the time. But yeah, maybe I think like going forward in the season, we'll have tempered expectations, as opposed to what he accomplished in the full season. But yeah, but he'll be like that third option behind Ball, Beal and Wall.
Did you say Ball?
Yeah, I was thinking of one of the Ball brothers for some reason that we don't have. Maybe we draft him, who knows?
Hey man, never lost. I beat Michael Jordan. That was LeVar Ball. He never lost, and he said he would beat Michael Jordan one-on-one.
Oh, right. In his interview with the GOAT, Stephen A. Smith. He'd been hoodwinked, bamboozled, led astray, run amok, and flat-out deceived.
I still find it fun.
Can we get Stephen A. as our next head coach? just completely skip over Scott Brooks.
I mean, it would definitely make for more entertaining press conferences, that's for sure.
I mean, he coaches the celebrity game, so that's experience, yeah, right? Yeah.
And, oh my god, could you imagine his reaction if a player got suspended for weed? Bro.
Stay off the weed!
Yep.
His locker room speeches would be, like, you have to record that, because I would watch that. I just like stream it, like record it, and like burn it to a disc and just watch it.
Why would you burn it on a disc? Why would you not upload it onto
for the memories?
Why would you not just upload it onto YouTube and watch it there?
You know, have a physical copy. That's why some people buy like game disc, right? To have that physical copy.
Because they're losers. No, I'm just kidding. I own.
Hayes, if you're listening,
I own. He is not listening to this. Damn. Anyway, guys, thank you for listening to the DC Sports Brain Trust. My name is Varun. I've been your host and moderator, joined as always by Chris, Nick, and Rahul. Thank you guys for your awesome takes, as always. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. We'll have the links to those accounts in the description of the episode. Go Caps, please prove us wrong. Get that comeback. Nats, continue to do what you do. I don't have anything for the other two teams. See you all next week. Keep supporting DC Sports.